is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The testimonies heard during these 872 days of public hearings brought them pain and bewilderment to their population. They could not believe that the atrocities that they were hearing from witnesses could occur in their country.
That was Dr. Lamine Cisse, chairman of the Gambia's Truth Commission, on the impact about alleged human rights violations committed during dictator Yahya Jammeh's rule. Details coming up. Also, Somaliland voters go to the polls today to elect parliamentary and local representatives. And the International Criminal Court is urging Sudan's transitional government to hand over suspects wanted for war crimes and genocide in Darfur. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The World Health Organization is asking for 20 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine for African countries to administer second doses to those who have received their first shot. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
After 3 weeks of declining rates of COVID-19 infections in Africa, the World Health Organization is reporting an increase in cases. It says its latest figures of more than 4.7 million cases, including 128,000 deaths, indicate a 17% rise over the previous week. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says she is concerned, but that it is too soon to tell whether Africa is on the cusp of a third wave.
While it's too soon to say if Africa is seeing a resurgence, however, we're seeing increases in a number of countries, we are monitoring the situation very closely, and we see that we are balancing on a knife edge. So this makes the rapid rollout of COVID-19 vaccines all the more important.
Moeti says South Africa accounts for nearly one-third of the 65,000 new cases reported by WHO. She says she fears new variants of the virus circulating in South Africa may be spreading into neighboring countries. She notes Namibia and Zambia are among 11 African countries experiencing more cases. So far, 28 million COVID-19 doses of different vaccines have been administered in Africa, a continent of 1.4 billion people. Moeti says Africa needs at least 20 million second doses of the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine by mid-July to give everyone who has received the first dose full immunity.
Africa needs vaccines now. Any pause in our vaccination campaigns will lead to lost lives and lost hope.
Moeti appeals to countries that have vaccinated their high-risk groups to share their excess doses with Africa. She notes France is the first country to donate tens of thousands of doses to Africa from its domestic supply. WHO says the European Union has pledged more than 100 million doses for low-income countries, and the United States has promised to share 80 million doses with lower-income countries. Other wealthy countries have said they will follow suit. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has tightened COVID-19 restrictions again amid a rapid rise in infections. Experts warn that Africa's hardest hit country is fast sliding into a third wave, with three of the nine provinces already there. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Under the new restrictions announced by Ramaphosa, curfew hours now are in effect from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. All gatherings, including religious services, are limited to 100 people indoors and 250 outside. Restaurants, beer halls and pubs have been told to shut down at 10 p.m.
The proportion of COVID-19 tests that are positive has more than doubled in the last month, from around 4% to more than 11%, even as we have increased testing across the country.
Ramaphosa told the nation that daily infections have shot up from around 1,000 2 months ago to about 4,000. Three of the country's provinces, Free State, Northern Cape and Gauteng, which includes the largest city, Johannesburg, have already entered a third wave of infections. Hospitalizations also have increased. Experts have started sounding warning bells. Angelique Kutsie is the chairperson of the South African Medical Association.
We need a bit more stricter restrictions, especially around the weekends, because that's when people come together and socialize. So we will have to look and see how what the numbers are going to do within the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Borders remain open and no restrictions have been put on businesses, leaving many, like Johannesburg resident Jonathan Mbedzi, excited that they won't be hit as hard as during the previous COVID restrictions that left people struggling to feed their families.
It is good because the businesses are still open. We are working, going to work. Surely we have to mask up every time when we are in public places.
Lucky Ntimane from the National Liquor Traders Council says they are also happy that alcohol has been spared after high speculation that it could be banned again.
You know, we are calling for everyone in the alcohol industry space to really comply with all the regulations that the government has set up. We cannot afford to have a situation whereby we are let down by the few, you know, affecting the livelihoods of the millions of people that are dependent on the alcohol industry and the value chain.
To date, more than 1.6 million people have been infected in South Africa, with more than 56,000 deaths. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Botswana Teachers Union has called on the government to prioritize its members on the ongoing COVID-19 vaccination program after at least 10 teachers succumbed to the virus this past week. But Botswana, which has 2 million people, has vaccinated less than 3% of its population. From Habrone, reporter Mokandisi Dube has the details.
The Secretary General of the Botswana Education Sector Unions, Dabogani Rari, says COVID-19 is killing a large number of their members. Rari says they've met the government with the country's coronavirus task force team in a bid to highlight the teachers' plight. He wants educators to move up in the COVID-19 vaccination queue.
We had a meeting with the Minister of Basic Education, and at that meeting, and also with the National COVID-19 Task Team. At that meeting, there was an agreement in principle that at the rate at which teachers are getting affected by COVID-19, teachers do now qualify to be part of what we refer to as the frontline workers.
Rari says teachers must be given urgent attention after 10 educators died this past week due to COVID-19. He says statistics from his trade union, also known by its acronym BOSETU, are grim.
BOSETU keeps on getting statistics across the length and breadth of the country. And the statistics by that time, it indicated that in a period of 2 weeks, 24 teachers had died due to COVID-19-related complications.
Botswana's President Mokgweetsi Masisi says the Southern African country will soon have enough doses to vaccinate the entire adult population. The country has since March received COVID-19 vaccines from China, India, and through the vaccine-sharing COVAX facility. A further 60,000 doses purchased through COVAX are expected to arrive by Thursday. The vaccination program says nearly 133,000 health workers and those over 65 years old have received their first dose. For VOA, this is Mkwanisi Dube in Haboroni, Botswana.
An armed gang abducted students yesterday afternoon from an Islamic school in the north-central Nigerian state of Niger in the country's latest mass abduction of students, according to police and state government officials. A spokesman for Niger's state police said in a statement that gunmen on motorcycles attacked the town of Tegina in the Rafi local government area of the state. He said the attackers were shooting indiscriminately and abducted a yet-to-be-determined number of children at Salihu Tanko Islamic School. Gambia's Truth Commission has wrapped up public hearings after 871 days of testimony that confirmed whispered rumors about human rights violations allegedly committed during dictator Yahya Jammeh's 23-year rule. A steady parade of witnesses, including some of those involved in atrocities, told of arbitrary arrests, torture, corruption, and summary executions, with the victims' bodies fed to crocodiles. Reporter Pandera Mbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina, sums up what lead counsel Esafal called crimes against humanity.
The commission has 2 months to submit its report to President Adama Barrow. He then has 6 months to implement the commission's recommendations. Dr. Lamin Cisse is the commission's chairman.
The testimony is heard during these 872 days of public hearings brought them pain and bewilderment to their population. They could not believe that the atrocities they were hearing from witnesses could occur in their country, a land of peaceful coexistence, a society imbued with tolerance of the highest order.
Cisse says arbitrary arrests, unlawful detention and killings, torture and forced disappearances, and sexual and gender-based violence were the hallmark of Jammeh's brutal rule.
The commission of these atrocities by Jammeh and his cohorts achieved the desired effect of instilling fear among the Gambian population. It also gave them, as Jammeh and his cohorts, time and the space to pillage the resources of the country.
The commission visited a crocodile pond that Jammeh ran in his native village of Kanilai. Evidence was presented that the animals were fed people, including babies who were killed for ritual purposes. Cisse again.
The crocodiles in Kanilai lay submerged in a dirty pond, while the peacocks in Jammeh's palatial grounds cry out ceaselessly and purportedly for their departed master. The chaos we recently saw at these grounds in Kanilai must not be the chaos in our country in the wake of the demise of the Jammeh regime.
392 witnesses testified. The commission said the majority were innocent victims of the former administration. Lead counsel Esafal summed up the toll.
In the process, Mr. Chair, I have just sat down here and draw up a list of those who were killed attributed to Jammeh and his forces. And Mr. Chair, my count, or our count, came to 214 people. 214 people in a small country like Gambia that borders or smacks of crimes against humanity.
Soldiers accused of coup attempts under Jammeh's rule were summarily executed. Student protesters massacred, journalists killed or exiled. Jammeh didn't spare his relatives. He had 5 killed after accusing them of spiritual warfare. Fals said foreign nationals weren't off limits either.
We've heard how the West African migrants were butchered in several places around the country, 67 of them. Initially, we thought they were 34, then 44, then 57, and ultimately 67 people butchered. And the government went on a campaign to cover this up. Well, we have had even today the witch hunting exercise that was ordered by Jammeh. 41 people died.
The TRC lead council says torture of detainees was not only endemic under Jammeh's rule, but he personally took part.
Jammeh created these institutions wherein torture was the name of the game. Torture was the order of the day. It was his star chamber. We've heard the NIA officer saying that torture was almost certain to happen in cases where he is involved. In fact, we've heard from someone so close to Jammeh who told us sometimes he will come disguise and participate in torture.
Now Gambians wait to see if Barrow will implement the TRRC report. But Fall says Jammeh cannot escape justice and that if he is not prosecuted in the Gambia, he could face justice elsewhere, including by the International Criminal Court. For VOA News, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Fatou Bensouda, prosecutor for the International Criminal Court, is urging Sudan's transitional government to hand over suspects wanted for alleged war crimes and genocide in the Darfur conflict. The conflict broke out when rebels launched an insurgency in the region in 2003. The government of former Sudan leader Omar al-Bashir responded with aerial bombings and raids by militias known as Janjaweed. Up to 300,000 people were killed and 2.7 million were driven from their homes. Among those wanted by the ICC is al-Bashir, who is currently in jail in Khartoum, his former Interior and Defense Minister Abdul Rahim Mohamed Hussein, and Hamed Haroun, security chief and later leader of Bashir's ruling party. The court also indicted rebel leader Abdullah Banda, whose whereabouts are unknown, and Janjaweed leader Ali Kushabi, who was charged last week with crimes against humanity and war crimes. The World Bank estimates Zimbabwe loses about half its annual GDP of around $21 billion directly and indirectly to illicit financial flaws. These include corruption, tax evasion, and smuggling. A report by some of Zimbabwe's leading thinkers links the country's political and business elite to much of the crime. Darren Taylor reports.
The 64-page report is called Cartel Power Dynamics in Zimbabwe. It's been published by South African social justice activist Mark Haywood of Maverick Media.
The report was written and researched in Zimbabwe, but it had to be published outside of Zimbabwe and it had to be published anonymously because the authors of the report, academics and activists, were fearful that publishing this report would bring upon them the wrath of the Zimbabwean state. And I think that the very fact...
Haywood says that fear is well-founded because the Zimbabwean government's been accused of imprisoning, torturing, and even killing its critics for decades. It has denied the allegations. The report details how some of Zimbabwe's economic and political kingpins collaborate to smuggle gold and diamonds out of the country in collusion with international dealers. It shows how the same players suffocate the country's economy through price fixing and monopolies.
It is the ordinary people of Zimbabwe in this instance who pay for the illicit financial flows that are conducted, facilitated by the elite of that country, very often in collaboration with elites of other southern African countries and other developed countries.
In public, President Emmerson Mnangagwa often condemns corruption, but the report names him as one of the cartel bosses whose patronage and protection keeps cartels operating. Mnangagwa and his government have called the report lies, but the report suggests that much of the president's personal wealth, estimated at $500 million, has been amassed illegally. This, says Haywood, is a human rights violation in a country where the World Bank says almost half the population lives in extreme poverty.
Zimbabwe is a rich country in resources, but it is a poor country in terms of what it has been subjected to in terms of very sophisticated and sustained corruption, much of which involves the hiding of money and illicit financial flows.
The report also implicates senior military officers in crimes. It links Adam Molai, a relative of former President Robert Mugabe and owner of Pacific Cigarette Company, to tobacco smuggling and corresponding tax evasion. Molai denies any wrongdoing. Haywood says Zimbabwe represents a very advanced, sophisticated form of capture of the state by political and economic elites and repurposing it for private interests. But he adds, it's by no means unique.
If you look at what is happening in Mozambique, if you look at what is happening in Angola, if you look at the current attempts taking place in Zambia to de-democratize that country, and if you look at what's happening in my country, South Africa, you see that this is a problem across the region. And what you will also see is that there is often quite a lot of overlap and cooperation between these criminal, political, and economic elites.
Haywood says the report shows what happens when those in charge of a country twist what should be development of their people into, effectively, their personal crime syndicate.
If you want a chilling vision of what the end game, what the end result of allowing illicit financial flows on a grand scale to continue unchecked, you really just need to look to northern Mozambique at the moment, Cabo Delgado, a province that has been starved of resources and that, as a result of its starvation, has been plunged into a social conflict, a military conflict, and a vast humanitarian crisis.
The document describes cartels as the key barrier to the improvement of living conditions for Zimbabweans. It says in Zimbabwe and across Africa, illicit financial flows are sustaining patronage networks and undermining democracy and good governance by keeping criminal political elites in power. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Polling stations have opened in the self-proclaimed Republic of Somaliland as voters choose parliamentary and local representatives. More than 1 million people have registered to vote. 246 candidates from three registered political parties are competing for 82 seats in the Parliament's House of Representatives. Currently, there is only one female lawmaker in Parliament. Today, 13 female candidates are competing. Despite holding democratic elections, Somaliland has failed to gain international recognition as an independent state. 103 international election observers from Europe and Africa, including former president of Sierra Leone, Ernest Bai Koroma, are monitoring the election proceedings. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the interview.